And now, from the world's leading maritime and offshore news website, gcaptain.com, comes the talk show for maritime professionals and enthusiasts, bringing you the latest news, discussion, and interviews with the industry's movers and shakers. This is G Captain Radio with your hosts, Jeff Eccles and Captain John Conrad.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of G Captain Radio. My name is Jeff Eccles and in the studio with me is John Conrad. Welcome, John. How are you today?
I'm doing good.
We've been having a heat wave here in Morro Bay, the central coast of California. Got up to about 85, 88 degrees here along the coast, and the highest recorded temperature on record 2 days ago in San Luis Obispo for that particular day. I think it was 97 degrees or something like that.
When I first moved to California, I went to rent a place, and the realtor brought me around to something like 10 places. And I said no to all of them, and she said, "What's the matter?" I said, "Well, none of them have air conditioning."
Right.
And she laughed at me. She said, "You don't need it." But on days like yesterday, I had a little trouble sleeping, and it would be nice. They're only about 10 days a year where I wish I had an air conditioning here, but yesterday was one of them.
Yeah, although the evening rolls around, we get that nice ocean breeze that comes across, open up the windows on both sides of the house.
Oh, and you can't do that because the fog rolls in and the moisture just sits and everything in your house rusts.
I'm trying to look at the bright side of things, John. Well, listeners, this broadcast is for the week of May 5th, 2014, and this is the place we bring you the latest news and happenings in the maritime and offshore industry. Today, we're going to talk about something that's been in the media quite a bit, the South Korean ferry incident. And of course, this has risen back up to prominence again because the president of South Korea has resigned. So, John, you know that full-time I'm an investment manager. I've been very, very busy with business, actually since the beginning of the year. And I have spent an overwhelming majority of my time, particularly the last 3 or 4 weeks, managing investment portfolios and fortunately opening up some new accounts for new clients. So I haven't been following the news very closely outside of the financial arena. But I did see a headline that the president of South Korea actually resigned. And was it specifically over this incident?
Yes.
No kidding. So maybe you can give myself and the listeners some background on it. Again, not reading the articles or the stories, I don't see the direct connection between the president and a ferry sinking.
Well, the president is not the top leader in South Korea. That's the prime minister. The president's job is more handling the image of South Korea to the world and the nation and making sure that things run right and run according to how they're supposed to run. He's the confidence man. What's confidence? Confidence is doing what you say you're going to do. I say I'm going to show up next week at 10 o'clock for a podcast. If I don't, you lose confidence in me. And that's why he resigned. Loss of confidence. The real mistake that was made is right after the ferry disaster was announced and they found out about it, the government of South Korea sent a notice to all the family of the children who were on board that all of the students of the school that was taking a field trip were rescued and safe. When in fact, they were stuck in their cabins and many of them eventually died. So it was that the parents were worried and then the government said, "Everything's okay, your children are safe." And the facts did not align with the media story.
So and I understand what you were saying about a lack of confidence, a lack of trust in somebody because he put something out there that wasn't true and that came back to bite him on the backside. When I think about the story that you just, or the incidents that you just told me about, however, it's really a PR issue. And I also think back to the jetliner going down somewhere, I suppose, in the South Pacific. They haven't found the jetliner, have they?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't think so. But the airline that was handling that had to be very, very careful about how they were releasing information, because if I remember correctly in that story, it was an airline that had learned its lesson from a prior incident on certain things to do and certain things not to do. And in today's day and age, here we are on a radio show that is podcast globally that anyone can access on demand, and it's the dissemination of information quickly and efficiently. And in today's day and age where there's texting, there is real-time blogging, there has been this democratization of information via the internet, it's hard for a company, a person such as a celebrity, a political figure, or even in this case, a government to effectively control the dissemination of that information. And do you think in this instance, things just got out of hand as far as that the information trail and the government was slow to take charge on that information trail?
The problem is not the PR. Everyone knows the government's full of talking heads that have campaigns to run, and that's just how it is. We wish we could cut through all of that and get the politicians to just talk the facts, but politicians are elected based on campaign funding. The campaign funding comes from the campaign trail where these things are said and they're not necessarily true. The problem is we accept the BS.
We as the consumers of this information?
Yeah, as the voters, the public. We accept a certain level of BS. We expect things to be not as bright as the politicians promised they were, right? We expect things not to run, you know, we expect that we're not going to keep within the budget, you know. We know that Washington is lying to us. We know that Seoul, you know, Koreans know that Seoul is lying to it. But we still expect a basic level of competence. When the PR is stripped away and we see gross negligence, that's when we get mad.
Mm-hmm.
We're okay with people making things look better than they are. We're not okay. You know, if you're renting a house, you expect a realtor to point out how the granite countertops make the house. And you know, she's pulling you away from the one room that's doesn't have any windows and is a little bit dark and the dripping faucet, and we don't expect the realtor. But if there's a beam that's cracking in the basement and the realtor knows about it and didn't show us, then we get angry. We don't get angry that she didn't go out of her way to point out the drippy faucet and the, but we do get angry if there's a major safety issue or thing with the house and we end up buying it. And the South Korean had bought into the that their ferries are safe. But as we talked about last week, you know, I've been on a dozen South Korean ferries and they were all unsafe. This is their major problems with the regulation of the ferry industry in South Korea. And it wasn't, you know, they expect the president's going to have some, you know, put a positive spin on his country. That's what he does. But when that positive spin covers up gross negligence, people get angry, rightfully so.
Hmm. Okay. So what I hear you saying is, as electorates, as people, as consumers, we expect a certain amount of spin. We've reached a level of cynicism in our current world, our current media world, where we're okay with a certain amount of spin. We actually expect that and we'll tolerate that. But when that crosses a line and becomes utter incompetence or downright fraud, then things change at that point.
And this is what GCaptain does a lot of. It's trying to cut through that stuff. There are always two sides to the story. So I was talking with a friend about a particular school up in San Francisco, and he's considering sending to his son to this school, or he potentially has another school. And I said, well, how are you finding out which school is better? Well, I'm talking to parents. I said, are you talking to any educators? No, the educators will just give me the good story. They won't tell me anything bad.
They'll just give the spin.
Well, the problem with that, and I agree, he's right. The problem with that is that the parents have not spent years inside the walls of that institution. They right. have not gone to conventions and talked to other teachers. They don't have the core expertise. It's like talking to a passenger on Carnival, and there are plenty of websites. There are whole forums of passenger people who love cruise ships who talk about what happens on cruise ships, but they never bring in the officers. You know, what do captains think?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we go to the principal as a potential parent and say, what are the problems with your school? He's going to minimize it. But if we call him up and say, or invite him to have a beer and say, hey, is everything really rosy in your neck of the woods? How's things? Because if we microphoned his house, I'm sure he's going to his wife every night and saying, the state doesn't give me this, I don't get this, I don't get that. It's not that he doesn't have the information. he can't release it to the general public without getting fired. But if you befriend that individual, you can tap into his expertise and find out the real problems and make decisions based on that. That's a lot of what G-Captain does. We've established friendships among a lot of individuals in the industry, people who aren't going to rosy up the facts. And we lay out the truth, and we do that on the promise of, a lot of them ask us not to say anything bad. And this is something a lot of our new hires at G-Captain or new journalists kind of, they have trouble with. And they say, how can I agree not to say anything bad? Well, it's, we often agree not to say anything bad based on assumptions. We lay out the truth. That's what we're looking for when we do a G-Captain news article. And even the people who have done the transgressions, they don't get angry at us for the truth. They were supposed to inspect the life ferries. They didn't. There's nothing they can say to defend themselves. And they're willing to put it out there, and we don't get angry. We get calls from companies that are angry. We get calls from people who are angry when we make assumptions, when we say, the ferries in South Korea are terrible. All ferries are terrible. When we make those broad generalizations, you know. So we try to cut through that by befriending people, insiders. And there are always two sides of the story. Public gets one side, you get the other. A lot of people just ignore all the information they get. So you have a congressman or something, I ignore everything that guy says because it's BS. Well, they have a lot of expertise. They were hired for a reason. They're inside the walls. You just have to approach them in a manner, you know, as an equal, and ask them the right questions and be their friend and promise not to do anything maliciously damaging. And they're often talked, they'll often be honest about what the problems are.
So a G-Captain, then you consciously do your best to avoid putting spin on the reporting that you do.
Lay down the truth and lay it down as honestly as possible, correct?
And who ultimately is the arbiter of that? Do you do that? Do you have an editorial staff, or do you rely on your writers? What's the actual process?
Our biggest source is expertise. We don't hire any journalists out of college. And, you know, I worked on a story with, I won't name which paper, but a major paper that's very well respected. Story, and the journalist was 24 years old. He had gone through graduate school in journalism, but he had no expertise on the topic. We want topic experts who, when someone says something that's not true, we can call them out on it. So that's we do trust our journalists. We don't actively edit everything that's published, but we do a thorough vetting process. Do these people really have the expertise? Do they have the friendships within the industry? Do we know that they're getting the facts and not just the cover story? And those are the people that we hire. We also are quick to apologize. This is a blog. There are problems inherent with this information scheme. People want to know about this ferry now. We don't have all the facts now. And we get a lot of flack, and the government is always telling us, wait till the investigation report comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree, in an ideal world, I would wait. This podcast episode of the South Korean ferry would not come out for another year. The problem is, we're talking to humans. We lose interest. In another year, there's going to be an even bigger disaster somewhere, I don't know what it is, that everyone's interested in. We just tend to forget what happened. So if we waited a year to report on this, no one would be interested. One, that's problem number one. Problem number two is, as all these investigations, they pick up some extra elements of truth, but they always bring in these things that have no relevance.
Mm-hmm.
An investigation will have over 100 pages. Well, 20, 30 of those pages are good, hard facts that are applicable. The rest of it is stuff that doesn't really directly correlate. Other problems in the industry that we got to look at that may or may not have caused the thing. So we bring you the facts as quickly as possible while you're interested to make an impact on the industry quickly. But we recognize we do make mistakes occasionally. Our policy is we have no problem apologizing to our readers. Luckily, we don't have to do it very often. But when you read a newspaper, it's hard to contact the journalist. And whatever I write the journalist, I write him an email, that's not getting published. We have the comment section on GCaptain. When we write something that's false or wrong, we get half dozen comments within 10 minutes saying, you guys off base on this. And we're not the only ones to read the comment. Those are public for everyone to read.
Right.
And then we go right in and actively try to apologize. We don't apologize for everything. If someone tells us we're wrong, we want to make sure we're wrong. We're not just going to apologize for things we're not wrong about. But, you know, if there's consensus, if the facts line up, when we realize we're wrong, we'll post it and say we're wrong.
Interesting and impressive. It seems to be much more of a democratic process than prior journalistic models. So you mentioned the speed of the dissemination of information. And I would go back to what I mentioned earlier. I think that there has to be, and I'd be interested in your views on this, a certain amount of control that comes along with whoever releases the information first. Because in a vacuum, if a person waits to release that information, there's a vacuum that these days is filled by instant media, by tweeting, by texting, by whatever, you know, these instant communication devices that we have these days. As everybody knows, I just turned 50 a few weeks ago, and when I was a kid in my 20s, none of that existed. So that vacuum couldn't be filled. But today that vacuum is filled. And I would think that for someone that is in control, and this is why I mentioned the word PR earlier, for someone that is in control, whether it's a politician or the CEO of a corporation, a government, whatnot, that I would imagine that they rush to get that information out there as quickly as possible, even sometimes maybe if it's not as accurate as it should be, to avoid having that vacuum filled by other information that may be, for lack of a better phrase, more wrong or more less relevant and more false.
I think you hit the nail on the head with one specific word you used, control. Part of the secret of GCaptain's success is I don't mind looking like an idiot sometimes. I actively seek out criticism. I love it when people come in and say, you're wrong, because I have prejudices, I have bias, I work very hard to eliminate those. And when someone comes in and says, you're wrong, it changes my worldview, but I have a more accurate understanding of the story.
And we were talking about wives before the podcast, and I think your wife concurs that you look like an idiot a fair amount of the time. Is that?
Oh, on a daily basis? Absolutely. But that's just it. You cannot control the media nowadays. People on the ferry, the students, the teachers, the guys on the boats, they all have cell phones.
Right, right.
And they're sending it them to us, to GCaptain. We've had photos, videos. You should see some of the gruesome stuff we see. Dead bodies. Marine fires. We had one a few months ago. This container ship caught fire. And within an hour, we had videos of the dead bodies of the crew members lined up. And a lot of the stuff we filter. But we can't control the story. All we can control, or the only thing GCaptain can even attempt to control, is the truth. Right? And a lot of times that's admitting, I don't know. Politicians don't like to admit, I don't know, because we don't want them. We expect them to have answers. We hired you. We're paying you all this money. My tax bill's crazy. You better have an answer, buddy. And we get mad as a public when they admit they don't know. So they try to control the media. They try to control the news. They try to control the situation. And in order to control something you don't know nothing about, you have to make an assumption. You have to put something out there. We, GCaptain puts out, stand by, we're trying to find facts, we don't know. But that's not a viable option for many politicians, or at least they don't think so. Because we want someone in there who is controlling things. Because if they don't know, if they're not controlling things behind the scenes, what other disasters are right. in the making?
Right.
But they're also human. They don't always know. And there's an element of, you know, as humans, we don't, I mean, it's this dichotomy. We want someone who's in control, but we don't want to be controlled.
Right, right. Yeah.
And this is the tightrope that our politicians are walking. Luckily, G Captain doesn't have that tightrope. I will tell you, though, you know, we get 3 million page views a month.
Wow.
Almost a million unique visitors, unique individuals who visit G Captain a month. That's a lot of the reason for that success is we bring it down to the truth. Mm-hmm. People are attracted to the truth. But a lot of, not really in the marine industry, but a lot of other blogs and websites, especially like celebrities and politics, they publish the truth too, but then they put the extra layer of embellishment on it.
Sensationalize it.
Sensationalize it. We would have a lot more page views if we did that. And there would be a lot more revenue coming into G Captain's coffer if we sensationalize the news. We don't do that. But it's a temptation. It's a constant temptation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a temptation that's hard to control. But we're lucky we don't have to get elected every 4 years. The temptation would be even stronger if there was an election, if our competitors were also sensationalizing the news. And so that's what we're running against to get politics. So part of the system is flawed. A bigger problem, though, is, I mean, the largest problem in this ferry. I mean, there were a number of problems. There was $529 spent on training the crew that year.
Mm.
You know, or some of the companies I worked with would spend $50,000. There was 1 year, the company I worked for spent $50,000 on my training alone in 1 year.
Right.
$529 is not enough. These crew weren't trained. If you're not trained, you're not going to respond. But then they made fundamental flaws, telling people to stay in their cabin, not telling them to put on their life jackets right away. These people did not have to die. Why did they do that? The crew thought they could control the situation as well.
Mm-hmm.
This control that you mentioned is part of what's killing us.
Mm-hmm.
It's the cruise ship captain in Italy did the same thing. They were running towards the rocks. He had other crew members. No one told him we're running towards the rocks. Because he told them, I'm the captain. I can control this. Mm-hmm. I got this situation. Mm-hmm. And then when they hit, he didn't send people to lifeboats because he goes, oh, yeah, we have a hole in the hull, but I can control this situation. Mm-hmm. I got this. And he didn't.
Right.
And it got to the point where he goes, I'm going to die. I don't want to die. And he jumps overboard and the passengers died. Same thing happened with this Korean ferry. And you ask why, you know, historically the captain's supposed to go down on the ship. Now, there's never been a law that says a captain has to do that. That's kind of culture telling us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
No ship owner actually expects the captain to go down the ship. What they expect, and the unsaid thing behind that statement, that generalization, all captains go down the ship, is the captain is responsible to do absolutely everything he can before he abandons ship.
Right.
But captains misalign that, and they think, I have to fix this. And a lot of times, that's what the captain of the Italian ferry, instead of calling everyone and dealing with the situation, he was calling people ashore. And we don't know if he was worried about the PR or he was trying to call an expert to, you know, how do I deal with this leak in the ship? But he had all these problems and he was reaching out for support externally instead of dealing with the emergency at hand.
Mm-hmm.
This Korean captain, I don't know exactly what he did, but he thought everyone would be, don't worry, stay in your cabins. I got this.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to control that situation where it was already completely and utterly beyond his control.
Right.
And it's also interesting that these incidents are happening in kind of near coastal environments. This is one of the biggest advantages of being a ship captain, one of the biggest life lessons that I wish I could teach everyone around us. I wish the politicians spent a year at sea. We'd have a lot better politics if all our senators had been out to sea a year, because the first thing you learn in the middle of the ocean is you can't control anything.
Right.
The amount that you can control is minute.
Right.
And you have to constantly focus on those things you can control and be cognizant of the things you can't, but not particularly worry about it. That's how you fix situations. The senators and the captain of this ferry and the Costa Concordia captain and a lot of our failures are go to the fact of they're trying to control stuff they absolutely cannot control. And in doing that, they're not doing their job.
Right. Interesting. Well, as the saying goes, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. So I hit on the word control, and that seems to be of significance with our discussion here and the incident as well. I do want to ask you, we're going to take a brief break here to hear from our sponsor, but there was one thing that you mentioned with in terms of control and the truth, and I want you to expound upon that a little bit, because I think that could be taken two ways. I think I know how you meant it, but it could also be twisted a little bit. So let's hear from the sponsor of our show, and I understand we have a new sponsor, is that correct, of the show, the
Teak Rail? Yes, we do.
So, why don't you tell us about the new sponsor, briefly?
The Teak Rail is a new website that brings you the best maritime gear.
All right, so it's theteakrail.com, and we'll take a break here and hear from them.
Theteakrail.com features a collection of some of the best marine equipment on the market, from navigation and electronics to maintenance and galley. If you find it on theteakrail.com, you can bet it's the result of hundreds of hours of research and thousands of hours of abuse aboard vessels sailing the high seas. You need the gear, so why not get the right gear the first time? Log on to theteakrail.com and check out all the great gear from motor, sail, and pro mariners. All the best, most durable gear picked by the experts. Theteakrail.com. Six Maritime is a leading provider of professional security services for the maritime industry. Using state-of-the-art military and industry practices, Six Maritime provides clients with tailor-made, cost-effective solutions that ensure both safety and security in every environment. Six Maritime specializes in the use of early threat detection technology for both mobile and immobile clients, giving them increased warning time to any threat. Avoid the violence, deter attackers, keep your crew and cargo safe. Leading the next generation of security, logistically simple, technologically advanced. Six Maritime. To learn more, visit sixmaritime.com.
Thanks for sticking with us and welcome back. I should also mention the unofficial sponsor, soon to be official one of these days when I get my act together, is my company, Eccles Wealth Management. So listeners, if you want to check out, we allude to it not infrequently here on the show, but I'm an investment manager. I've done it for 25 years. And you can check out my website at www.retireslo.com. That's the word retire and then slo.com. And you'll be able to see what I look like there and check out my background and my history. Although I think I mentioned my 2 years of being an ordinary seaman on there somewhere in the bio. So John, I want to go back to briefly the topic of control, just because you mentioned something that at G Captain, what you're concerned about is controlling the truth. So I want you to expound on that, because the truth is the truth. It's an absolute.
You can't control it.
It's
correct.
Not relative. So I think what you meant, well, tell me what you meant to say.
Controlling the process of finding the truth.
Right.
There are things we can control. The ferry captain cannot control the fact that a ship was sinking. He could not control the fact of the environment and the Coast Guard response and a lot of other things. But he could control the safety of his passengers. He could have ordered them to the lifeboats right away out of their room. If he had focused on the few things that he could control, more lives would have been saved. G Captain, we try to focus on what we can control, auditing the facts, making sure that what we publish is correct, and always looking, did we miss anything? And if we did, we apologize for it. We don't try to prevent ships from crashing. We don't try to tell captains what they should or shouldn't do with their ships. We just try to control the process of finding the truth, if that makes sense.
Yes, that makes a lot more sense. Thank you for that. What lessons are there to be learned from the resignation of the president of South Korea? We spoke a lot last week about the issue of training and preparedness. So that's an obvious, that's a given that there needed to be better training and better preparedness to avoid disasters like we saw in South Korea. But with this advent of the resignation of the president of the country, are there things that we in the maritime industry should take heed of from those series of incidents that led to him resigning?
No. There's nothing particularly new for our listeners, no life lessons for our listeners to learn. But this should sound a striking alarm bell in the heads of politicians worldwide. There is complete and utter ignoring of the maritime domain. There's an overwhelming apathy in Washington for ships. There's an overwhelming apathy in the public for ships because they think it doesn't matter. Their stuff's going to arrive on time. When I go to Walmart, stuff's going to be on the shelves. Well, it doesn't take much. They are only secure in their position because the listeners of this podcast are diligent mariners who do their job very well on a daily basis. They're relying on our hard work and sacrifice, and we will continue to work hard and sacrifice, but not everything's under our control. There are freaks in nature. What I'm saying is if a ferry in San Francisco hits the Golden Gate Bridge and the bridge collapses due to weather, due to anything else, the governor of California, the senators, all the people who have been ignoring the maritime domain, they're going to be people asking for their resignation too. So I can't control the fact whether our congressmen invest more time and effort into the maritime world. But I can say if I was a congressman or senator or governor, I would be looking at, and that's what shocks me. That's what shocks me about the South Korean and the silver lining on this cloud is the fact that the president of the country was asked to resign over a ship sinking. This is new and encouraging if our politicians take heed of it. And if they're worrying, well, will I lose my job because maritime is not supported, because we're not giving enough funds, because we're not funding the Coast Guard and VTS? Do we have the resources? Do we have the inspectors? If I was a U.S. senator, I would be worried. And I hope that they look over South Korea and say, that's what everyone's asking. How did this, yes, it was a tragic incident, but there are fires every week around the world, earthquakes, people die, and the president doesn't lose his job. Here, the president of a country lost his job because he completely ignored the maritime domain.
So the hope there is that
it can happen there, it can happen here in the United States.
So that other politicians
have to wake up, and I can't make them wake up, but they should see this, and if they're smart, say, hey.
Well, here's an interesting twist on that too, John. You mentioned the apathy on behalf of legislators, governors, politicians, governments toward the maritime industry. I wonder if, in an ironic twist, some of that apathy is just based on a certain amount of trust, and you touched on
Absolutely.
This as well. I feel extremely fortunate that as a young man in my 20s after college, I had the opportunity to live and work on a ship for 2 years. Unique, outstanding experience. It helped frame who I am and my outlook on the world as I've gone through the rest of my 20s, 30s, 40s, and now into my 50s. You, of course, are a sea captain. You've spent time at sea, and a lot of our listeners have spent time at sea. But the fact of the matter is, a majority of the public, a majority of the politicians and our leaders haven't. So aren't they, in a way, just forced to let that to the mariners? In other words, let the management of the maritime industry to the mariners because, A, there's a certain amount of ignorance there. They don't know about it. And sailing has a certain aura and mystique about it. And so they don't know about it. So I'm going to trust people like you, an unlimited master, to take care of it, a graduate of a maritime academy. I'm going to trust those in the Coast Guard to do the things that they do. And there it sits from a government and leadership perspective.
Absolutely. The trust is essential and it has been earned. And it's, you know, the opposite of trust is if these politicians were overly concerned with maritime, it would cause a lot of problems. If they didn't trust us to kind of self-regulate the industry, there would be a lot more problems. But trust has to be a two-way street. Trust comes when we ask for help. They expect us to do our job, and we expect them to do their job and pretty much leave each other alone. But when we ask for help, and we don't ask for it often, but we MARAD's asking for help to support U.S. shipbuilders. We're asking for help to support the intercoastal marine highway system. That's the problem. They expect us to do our job, but they're unwilling to help when we say, yeah, we got 90% of this. But in this one domain, we need help. When we admit our failures, we don't receive any extra funding. We don't receive any extra. We continue to be ignored. And that's from, I have apathy over a ton of things that are critical to my life. My airbag, I've never seen my airbag. I've never inspected my airbag in my car.
In your car, you're talking about.
I've never put much thought into my airbag. I don't know much about airbags. I trust that General Motors has their stuff together. Now, there are car blogs, and there are safety experts who do nothing but airbags. Now, if one of those blogs that I know nothing about take apart airbags, and there's people who do this, and they said, wow, we didn't realize there's a major problem with this airbag. They go to General Motors and they say, we found this one particular problem. We would like your help to recall and fix it. Well, General Motors would, I hope, care. And their caring is what keeps me safe. They're listening for problems. Now, if the airbag bloggers and everything else went to General Motors and said, there's this problem, and General Motors ignored them, the media ignored them, as is generally done in the maritime domain, that's where the problem comes.
So to alleviate the situation of apathy toward the maritime industry on behalf of governments, do you feel it's largely a matter of education?
No, it's a matter of listening. We're not asking for much. In the previous, I think 2 weeks ago, we had a podcast. You know, when a plane crashes, everything's done. Ships, planes, submarines are sent to found the black box. Now we have the Deepwater Horizon that sunk, and we haven't found the black box. It was probably destroying the fire. But we haven't really done anything to photograph it. Now I'm asking the government, black box is probably gone, but please go and look for it. Please take detailed photos of that rig. Please maybe not recover the whole rig, but let's please get the control room. Please get the BOP panel that possibly failed. Inspect it and see if it actually failed. I'm not asking them to send submarines and all this. I'm asking them to send one ship for a week to recover some critical components. I'm asking politicians, I've asked on this radio show, for that little bit of help. And there's been no response. No politicians have contacted. Have they contacted you, Jeff?
No, my phone hasn't been ringing with that.
That's the problem. If I was asking a politician, shipyards are important. I want all ships coming into U.S. built in U.S. shipyards. That would be an unrealistic request. But asking, when a ship sinks, let's send one ship to recover the black box, recover critical equipment, and photograph. It's essentially a crime scene. So if the requests are reasonable, and reasonable requests are not being answered, that's where you run into trouble. That's the problem here. That's why the president of South Korea resigned. He knew about it. Experts in South Korea had told him, we have ferry problems. We don't need much. We need a little money for training. We need a little money for... And he completely ignored that. And the result, he's completely lost his job. And the respect, and in that culture, respect is everything. This is worse than an American losing his job. He's losing a piece of his identity.
Right.
It's the equivalent of a U.S. politician being attacked viscerally by the media. Yep. So the story here is maritime community, we're not asking for a complete rehaul of shipyards and fix all of our problems. We're asking for a couple simple things. When a ship sinks, send one ship to go recover the black box and do that. I believe that's reasonable. They're ignoring that. They're going to continue to be safe with their jobs, ignoring us until something happens that's big. And what happens when a ship hits the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge and the arches collapse and a bus full of someone falls into the water and a few hundred people die? What's going to happen? New York Times is going to call me. NPR is going to call me. Fox News is going to call me. We get it all the time. And when they ask what was done to prevent this, I'm not going to say it's this senator's fault, that governor's fault. They didn't listen to me. It was unfair. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to lay out the truth. And when that happens, the public's going to say, going to judge, was John Connor, was his request reasonable? Can we afford these requests, or are they outlandish? If the requests are reasonable and the politicians completely ignore it, they're going to be in the same position as the president of South Korea. Now, I hope and pray that never happens, but it should be an alarm bell to our politicians that they don't have to spend their whole days and all their money on the maritime domain, but they have to listen for reasonable requests if they want the trust to be in two directions.
Interesting. I like the way you described how you would like them to listen as well. Very nice. I'll give you a quick little sidebar just on my background and living and working on a ship for 2 years and then coming back going into business after that. But the very first time that I had ever set foot on Wall Street, I was wearing black steel-toed boots and jeans and a peacoat. And
you fit right in.
And it was just after crossing the North Atlantic on the 285-foot research vessel that I worked on. So I was excited. Well, first off, it was a magical moment for me anyway. My uncle was in the Navy and fought in World War II. And I had, of course, like any other American citizens, I'd read about the immigrants coming into Ellis Island. And so the very first time I ever saw the East Coast of the United States, and the very first time I ever saw New York, and the very first time I ever saw the Statue of Liberty was after being out of the country for about 8 months and then crossing that North Atlantic and seeing it from the water. And it was awesome, the way that word is meant to be used. It was literally awesome. So it was fantastic. So I knew that I wanted to work in the financial services industry, something to do in the investment arena. So I was so excited and took the train across and visited Wall Street. But the perspective of being there first, wearing those steel-toed black boots, and then coming back a number of years later, the first firm that I ever worked with was Merrill Lynch. And as I moved up in the ranks, I'd go back to Wall Street periodically on a regular basis. And I just remember sometimes riding in the elevator with some of the folks that were in the business with me. And quite frankly, a lot of them are silver spoons, and a lot of them are, I'm not going to use any cuss words like you and I would normally use down on the boat, but a lot of them were, like I said, I'm having trouble describing it without using some bad
brooms,
words.
Brooms, they had brooms sticking in certain places.
Exactly.
Unmentionable on the radio.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm getting at. And I remember specifically one time riding in the elevator and listening to the conversation that these guys were having, and I was so grateful that I had the perspective that I had that being a mariner gave me. So I would add to that not only listening, but perspective. If maybe here's the solution, John. Everybody before they go into Congress here in the United States, we got to put them out on a ship for 6 months and let them sail for six months.
That's a reasonable request.
There you go.
Not going to happen.
We'll put them on the in the deck department and have them do their share of chipping and scraping.
It does. It,
and painting.
It teaches you what you can control and that you'd better pay attention to what you can control. You got to do everything you can to control the very little you can, and you to kind of forget about the stuff you can't control. But you're right. It also eliminates arrogance.
Right.
You think you go out, we've all been there 18 on our first ship, and I got this, I can handle any conditions, and then the weather picks up, and you say, I'm really rather insignificant.
Right.
And a lot of people in power think they can control everything because they haven't been in that situation where, man, that there's a lot that's bigger than me.
Yeah.
That's what I love about mariners and our listeners. I've never... You know, there are a number of people who are arrogant. There are a few captains. But most people, you know, they're not going around, I'm Captain Joe, I'm the captain. You know, it's a very arrogant-free work environment for the most part.
For the most part. Well, but I think you'd agree with this, I enjoy the arrogance of a captain at sea. First off, he is captain. And it usually doesn't come along with, he or she is captain, and it usually doesn't come along with false pride or hubris, the way that it can with politicians or other places. But
it's different. It's a different type of arrogance. Some people on Wall Street and people in Washington say I know this to be true. And they have no idea. That's the arrogance. The difference between a ship captain, a lot of them are perceived as arrogant. But when they're telling you, you do this at sea, you are going to die. And people go, who do you know? They're telling the truth. They're not telling you that to hurt your feelings.
Right.
They're telling you that because they've experienced it. Or a lot of the politicians haven't been on a ship. They talk like they know what's best for the maritime industry.
Right.
But they haven't been out there. So, yeah, when I was 18, I thought every ship captain was arrogant SOB.
Right.
You learn to realize that most of them are just telling you the truth.
They know, yeah.
As opposed to some other people who are in charge of certain political systems who are telling you exactly what happens, and they have no idea.
Right, right. Very good. Well, we've been in a bit of a philosophical mood today. It's been an interesting conversation. We've gone pretty long, but hopefully it's been as interesting to the listeners as it's been for me sitting here talking with you, John, about these items. So let's wrap things up. I do want to invite the listeners once again to check out my website. It's www.retireslo.com. Retireslo.com. If you have any needs with regard to investment management, I described earlier my background, where I come from. If you want an investment manager with his shoes firmly on the ground, shoot me an email. So, John, closing thoughts with regard to the resignation in South Korea or the other things that we talked about today in terms of trust and apathy in the maritime industry.
This is huge. This hasn't happened in decades. You know, 100 years ago, if a ship in the Royal Navy sunk, a parliamentarian would lose his job. No politician lost his job for the Exxon Valdez. No politician lost his job that I know of for the Costa Concordia. This is a striking, ringing bell, and one that I hope politicians take notice of. But let's not brush over the fact that a president of a first world, well-organized, very fast-growing country lost his job over complete apathy for the maritime domain. And it's a very sad situation, but I hope our politicians and politicians worldwide get the message that the citizenry does care.
So let's hope for positive change as a result. Thank you, John. Well said. And thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week to keep up with what's going on in the maritime and offshore industry. On behalf of John Conrad and myself, Jeff Eccles, we look forward to speaking with you again next week. Be well and be safe.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest in maritime and offshore news. G-Captain Radio is a production of GCaptain.com and is recorded weekly in Morro Bay, California. For more information or to be a guest on the show, visit GCaptain.com.